Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA. Peter Ryan is Deputy Consul General at the Consulate General of Ireland in New York, except you won't find him around here today or indeed tomorrow either, because he is at the CYC, the Continental Youth Championships Gaelic Athletic Association. I will continue, but I wouldn't have much more to say unless we link up with Peter. And Deputy Consul, you're very welcome to the program.
Thank you, Adrian. Appreciate it very much.
Now, what is CYC, and first of all, where are you?
I'm in Philadelphia at the moment, in Westchester, in Chester County in Philadelphia.
Right.
And I'm here for what is the largest Gaelic sports competition in the world outside of Ireland. It is held each year in the United States, and it involves children from all of the Irish communities across the United States and indeed from North America and Canada.
Right.
Who come together, boys and girls, from the age of under 6 to under 18, to take part in Gaelic football, hurling, and of course there's lots of Irish culture thrown in as well with music and dancing also.
Great, and camogie as well.
Camogie is a growing part of it. Delighted that camogie really seems to be taking off, not just in the States but back in Ireland as well.
Okay.
As you know, for a long time it was ladies football, which had the honour of being the fastest growing Gaelic sport, but now it's camogie, and indeed the president of the Camogie Association of Ireland, Aileen Lawler, is in Philadelphia to lend her support this weekend to the efforts being made to promote camogie.
Okay, now just so we can get past this, describe camogie for us.
Camogie is the ladies' version of hurling, which is Ireland's oldest national sport. It's been played in Ireland probably for over 2,000 years. The great Cú Chulainn and the members of Na Fianna in Ireland, the great warriors of Ireland, all had to prove themselves on the hurling field before they could be considered to be leaders of people. So it's an extraordinary important sport in our history. It is part of the hurling family, which is the fastest field game in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an amazing spectacle to see. I think unless you've seen it, people don't credit quite the skill level and the bravery and the teamwork that's involved.
Right. And, of course, the expression, the clash of the ash, has, in fact, to do with hurling and camogie, too. That's when, because it is, as you say, it's a fast sport. But it's also one that can be quite scary, even for spectators. You can actually hear the clashing of the camogie sticks, the hurling sticks, and so it's not for the faint of heart.
It's not for the faint of heart, but it's a wonderful game because what when you consider the other sport that people play, particularly in the U.S. here, which you know, can lead in some cases to devastating injuries, lacrosse,
right,
American football and so on. It is actually quite a sport with actually quite a few injuries. I mean, the injuries tend to be splintered fingers and things like that more than anything else, you know.
Okay, the images that we have of hurling, if we go back, a few decades, or indeed before then, was that there was very little by way of protection or protective gear that was provided, that the skill itself, you were relying upon goodwill and skill in hurling in particular. And when you see somebody coming after you with a wooden stick designed to hit a ball, which is also like a piece of rock. What actually has occurred recently in terms of, is there headgear? What is it that makes the sport safer than we have imagined it to be?
Sure. Well, the single most important thing is that all players at all levels now wear headgear.
Yes.
And that's a protective helmet. So with the result that the instances of head injuries are very, very few now, very, very rare.
Yeah.
And you have children at all ages playing. So across Philadelphia, you have children from the age of 4 and 5 learning to play. And it's really valuable because they're picking up a tradition that their ancestors played at home.
Right.
That's recorded in the annals of the Four Masters, as you know. And they're doing it. It's a really fun way to build team spirit, to build hand-eye coordination.
Right.
And people find it really helpful for other sports. Any other racket sports or anything like that, it's really, really helpful to have played hurling. And similarly, I mean, the similarities with the baseball swing are there also. So any time you can ever put a hurler on a baseball diamond to watch them strike the ball is absolutely beautiful. And, of course, they have the rare privilege of being able to strike off both sides when they're hurlers.
Yes.
So it's great for kids to be able to do it. It's a great platform from which to play other sports also.
You know, we sometimes get the impression that Gaelic football is very inclusive, and it is that Gaelic sports in general are very much, Irish, and you nearly have to present, an ID of lineage. We're looking at an expansion of these sports, which now it have opened up to many other groups.
Absolutely, and I think that's one of the real features. In Philadelphia, you'll see that there's over 2,000 children taking part and playing in the competition over the weekend.
Yeah,
and just watching the children running around there, you have children of Chinese background, you have children of African American heritage,
right.
Children of Italian heritage, and it's really interesting because we organised, as you know, a special business forum to try to bring some of the parents of these children together, encouraging to do business with one another and with Ireland, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the speakers at the event was an Italian sports broadcaster with ESPN called Joe Lenardi.
Yes.
And he told us that as a young man in secondary school, he had been brought out to watch hurling by one of his teachers, who was an Irish priest.
Right.
And the teacher had said to him, "You mightn't thank me now, Joe, but someday you'll thank me for having seen the greatest game in the world." And Lenardi said, "I have to agree," he said, "for two reasons. First of all, the speed and the skill level is clear to anybody who watches hurling. Secondly, mm-hmm. the fact that Gaelic football is run, as you know, Adrian, on a voluntary basis.
Right.
So all of the parents, all of the coaches, all of the people who prepared the ground in Westchester. So there's over 15 pitches there, 2,000 children playing games over 3 days. Not a single person working there is being remunerated. So that is a very, very special feature of Gaelic sports and of Gaelic life. And that's why we're so happy to support it in any way we can.
Yes, that kind of begs the question, though, as to how the forum is now handling the business and business aspects of it. Is this by businesses, by affiliation? How does that, what do you expect to come out of that?
Well, what has come out of already is that it's an opportunity to connect Irish and Irish American people and parents of some of those children from other heritages with some of the economic developments in Ireland and some of the economic opportunities in Ireland. And I think the opportunities are there. We've never had more US investments in Ireland. We've never had more Irish investment in the US. We've never had more Irish companies looking to do business in the US. So, for example, you take the state of Pennsylvania. The island of Ireland would comfortably fit into the state of Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
We have 168 Irish companies working in Pennsylvania. I believe that there's great scope there to try to develop that and get some of our Gaelic family and the GAA community engaged with that. So to find partners for Irish companies.
Yeah.
Maybe to find partners in Europe. Irish companies who can help some of their companies come into Europe.
Right.
So it was really well received, Adrian. Of course, I needn't tell you about the reception that the gathering has received from the Irish American community. absolutely extraordinary.
It is, and of course we're bragging, you know, that so far, better than 15% increase in visitors to Ireland for this very special year, the Year of the Gathering, an increase that not many might have predicted, but obviously the message has gone out and the diaspora is responding. But again, for North America, there's no letting up. I mean, it's obvious that this is going to be a banner year for tourism.
Exactly. And I think you hit the nail on the head earlier in the year when you talked about the gathering really being a reaching out to the Irish community and friends of Ireland. And It's thanks to people like yourself through your channels and people who have been here and who know what Ireland has to offer. We really have something very special to offer. And I really can't get over that volunteerism element. So the volunteerism element on the ground in Ireland with the gathering is matched by the volunteer element that we see right here in Philadelphia with people from all walks of life. A good friend of mine who works as a church organist in Philadelphia, I met him this morning and he was driving around collecting bags of rubbish from the venue where the games are taking place.
Well, of course, we saw that, and my guest friends is the Deputy Consul General at the Irish Consulate in New York, Peter Ryan. And Peter, this may be also, a good opportunity to show how volunteerism indeed did not have to be created when the ravages of Sandy hit the east coast of the United States. There we had true Irish mehel spirit in doing something that indeed we inherited from the generations before us. And that is, if somebody is basically in trouble, let's get together and do the best we can again without any form or expectation of remuneration.
Exactly. And I think it is wonderful, I have to tell you, in Philadelphia to have met people who were out there as part of the Rockaways. I met people from Chicago who had traveled up to join us in the Rockaways, people from across Pennsylvania, including Pittsburgh, would come.
Yeah.
So that's great. So that spirit is there every week and in the terms of passing on our traditional games to our children. And what we had hoped with the business forum, and I think we've made a great start with it, to be honest, what we'd hoped is to encourage some of that so that we help one another in our business lives.
Right.
Because we're all working away every day, and it's what a wonderful opportunity when we come together in these sort of numbers to say, okay, here are some of the initiatives going on in Ireland, whether it's the Connect Ireland initiative or the gathering or some of the other things that are happening, educating some of your children in Irish universities, for example. And here's some of the ways in which we can work together to help one another. So I would love to have an opportunity next year when the CYC comes to New York to really bring that up to the next level, because we have such a critical mass of organizations in New York.
Now, it's coming back to New York. We should we might as well point out that the very first hosting cities for the Continental Youth Championships was held in New York, and that's for those who are wondering, when was that? It's hard to believe that was back in 2004.
That's right. So this is the 10th anniversary, the 10th tournament, if you like, this year. And, but look, there are so many wonderful people involved in it. The GAA, as you know, is a unique organization in Ireland in the extent of its reach and the depth of its reach and the way in which people are so devoted to it. And if we can harness that a little bit to help a lot of the other organizations, it'll give a great boost, as it is doing in Philadelphia. We had all kinds of partner organizations involved, with the Irish Network Philadelphia involved, the Friendly Sons of St. Patrick, the Breton Lawyers, the Irish American Business Chamber and Network, the Mayo Society, the Donegal Society, all of the traditional societies, and a number of the dancing schools. So sometimes when an event like this comes along, it gives you a chance to all get together with that metal spirit again. And from our point of view, as a as a consulate, it's very special for us to have the opportunity to be part of all that.
There was something that I think deserves to be revisited. You had spoken about the great number of Irish companies who, during the Celtic Tiger years, set up and invested in America, brought their companies to America, partnered with American companies already. Sometimes when we hear about the American business connection with Ireland, we think of inward investment from the U.S. into Ireland, which, of course, despite the world economic downturn, has, in fact, increased, not decreased. We hear very little of Irish companies who, in fact, the nearly parity with respect to the number of jobs created in the United States by Irish companies as there are with American companies on the island of Ireland.
Yeah, we have, I think, in the region of 250 Irish companies in the U.S. employing somewhere over 80,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
You have just over 1,000 U.S. companies on the island of Ireland employing somewhere probably up to 80,000 as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you have almost parity. But what's really interesting for us is that Irish companies are continuing to come here to seek markets here in the U.S., to seek research and innovation, to seek investment. And, of course, because Ireland offers such a great platform into Europe, Ireland is essentially the gateway of choice for American companies in Europe, whether it's for Google, whether it's for your pharmaceutical company, whether it's for your Bank of New York Mellon or the other financial investors. But we have so many technology companies, we have so many science startups. We really have a two-way relationship that's unique in Europe. And I believe, and I think the figures are demonstrating this, that there's tremendous scope to develop that even further.
Mm-hmm.
And wouldn't it be wonderful to have more Irish Americans involved as part of that?
Absolutely.
And to really harness some of that.
Right.
We'll have to reach out to these guys. So when somebody like you is saying that the scope is there for greater growth, well then I'm buying it because we see it. We've seen it with the gathering. If we can gathering.
Yeah.
We can do it for business also.
Now I do want to ask you about a, because this interview is going far too well and too good. So let's see if I can put the cat amongst the pigeons here. There is an aspect of Gaelic sports which is a thorny issue, whereas we can look at the Gaelic Athletic Association, look at, you know, 2 millennia of participation and heritage and whatever, the Gaelic Players Association have very sincere concerns about the lack of insurance of whatever that thin line between the sports, whether it is in fact a voluntary sports, what happens, what has happened, the welfare aspect of that is something that is ongoing. I know you're not you're not in a position to basically take sides one way or the other, but how is that going?
Absolutely. Can I give you a personal view on it?
Mm-hmm.
The relationships between the GAA family and the Gaelic Players Association has never been better.
Mm-hmm.
Full stop. There has never been more care than there is now for the welfare of players, for the further education of players, for the protection of players. We saw that with the introduction of the head guards for all hurlers at all levels, at all ages, including training. We see it in the care that's being provided in terms of medical services, in terms of insurance for players.
Right.
Of course, there are things I think that all of us, including myself, and as you know, I'm involved with the newest GAA club in New York, the Manhattan Gaels.
Yeah.
Of course, there are things that we're going to improve on. But as an organization, the GAA is unrecognizable from where it was 30 years ago.
Absolutely, and indeed, much less it seems to be ongoing. And doesn't the terminology or the reality that this is, you know, this is not considered to be at a professional level, that it's still, as it always has been, you know, an amateur sport, though indeed many would wonder why, since, you know, it is among, in terms of recognition and in terms of dedication, you know, there are many who feel that it's, you know, it's an amateur sport, but being played at a professional level.
Sure, certainly the level of athletic prowess that's required and so mm-hmm. on can be
and
equated,
commitment.
No doubt. But at the same time, the response that many GAA people would give you, and it's very similar to my response, is that we don't believe that the game would be best served by going professional. The beauty of being able to play GAA is, in my own case, in my own club back in Dublin,
right.
Two of the guys who are from my own club play for the Dublin team. Mm-hmm. Both of them are in full-time employment. Both of them come out. They help take down the nets at our local pitch. They help clean up the dressing room when they're rostered to do so. They both look after underage teams without being asked to do so. And they're both training four times a week with the Dublin senior football team. So would you be able to maintain that? And I know the same is in Mayo. You know stories of people over so many years who devoted their entire lives to it. I'm not sure the same the same devotion would be obvious if the thing was professionalised. But I do believe there should be a base professionalism in terms of the services provided to players.
Right.
But certainly the players themselves.
Now, you have from North America, right there this weekend, you have all of these, not only youngsters from, you know, under 6 to under 18, but there's a lot of organization, obviously, involved in getting all of this together. A tremendous amount of expenses for those who, like in any other sport, or those who are involved in, you know, any of the Irish cultural sports, have. Somebody's got to pay the piper. How is this being funded? And how?
Yeah, it's largely funded by sponsorship from Croke Park. From the O'Neill Sportswear Company.
Yes.
And then a whole series of local sponsors on the ground in Philadelphia have come on board to support the event. And they range from the businesses of parents who are involved in it and so on.
Right.
But the vast majority of the costs are met by the parents of the children. So
right.
Parents pay their own travel costs. Parents pay their own hotel costs.
As in fact they do in dancing and in, you know.
Absolutely. Huge
yeah.
sacrifices are made
yeah.
in order to pass this heritage on to their children.
Yeah.
And we see so many. So if for the business forum, we had a discussion there, a discussion panel there with the president of GAA, Liam O'Neill,
yes.
John Nash, former NBA general manager, two of the biggest basketball clubs in America,
yeah.
Joe Lenardi of ESPN, and Michael Hickey, who played with the Dublin team in the 1970s.
Right.
So Michael Hickey is in the pharmaceutical business. He lives just outside Philadelphia. He was explaining that he was studying for pharmacy while playing for Dublin. He said the biggest impact on his life and the greatest gift that his parents gave him, aside from his education, was his love for Gaelic sports. So you couldn't get probably a busier university course than pharmacy.
Yeah.
And yet he made sure that not only did he excel that and excel in that academically and in business, he also excelled in the field of play, and he was a member of the famous Dublin team in the 70s. Now, that's all down to the sacrifice the parents make.
Right.
Michael sat there on Wednesday with us and told us about the qualities that he and the lessons that he learned on the sporting field and how he translated them into business. And I think that those qualities are common across all sports. And I think if we can find a way to identify some of those and hopefully bring a bit of business on the back of it, we can secure the future of Gaelic games in North America, for the next 100 years to make sure that it's here when we're all gone.
Apparently, you know, you're on the right track, and it's tremendous that the GAA in Ireland, you know, is not only giving their blessing to, but also becoming involved. They have been involved in making sure that, you know, this is not just a parochial or, for that matter, a national sport kept in Ireland, but rather that it has given the opportunity and that they're actually nurturing the Continental Youth Championships as well.
Yeah, exactly. Well, listen, we're delighted with it, and the thing is only go from strength to strength. I look forward to seeing you at next year's one. I'll maybe do a broadcast from there. That'll be wonderful and give you a chance to speak to some of the families that are there from right across the United States, Adrian. But listen, thanks for everything that you do to promote not just Ireland and the gathering and Connect Ireland and everything, but also everything you do to keep Irish America in touch with what's going on at home and what's going on with one another. We couldn't do it without you.
And, well, okay, this may sound now like a little bit of backslapping, but the Irish government and indeed the embassies throughout the United States have really gotten, their involvement to the level that it is not just it's not just for show. The Irish government has really come a long way in making sure, in facilitating in whatever way they can, the growth of what is the oldest Irish cultural organization in the world.
That's
something
right.
That started a couple of thousand years ago and is only growing from strength to strength. Okay,
yep.
You have music, you have, and you've got kids down there,
yep.
Obviously. So can you play the role of the Pied Piper now and have all of those kids get out there where they belong? And I'm sure that they're having a lot of fun as well.
They're having great fun, and there's a ceilidh on. Most nice. Evenings there's a big ceilidh on Sunday afternoon, so if people want to drop along to the soccer facility in Westchester, they can find it online, CYC2013, follow it on Twitter as well.
Yeah.
And everybody's welcome to come along and be part of it.
And there is a website, cycgaa.org, that again will give mountains of information.
Yeah.
Thank you for taking the time for us. Okay, August Tuhain. Peter Ryan there, Deputy Consul General at the Consulate General of Ireland in New York City. Again, friends, great activity, great and it's sports and participation in Ireland's oldest traditional cultural sport, the Gaelic Athletic Association. You're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA.